The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
Is the era of stable weather completely over? Are we going to see topsy-turvy, upside-down weather in the United States and those four major food-producing countries of the world from now on? For the last several years, I've been warning on this program and before tens of thousands of people in large public audiences that drought was going to strike the United States, that it was going to strike into Britain and Europe and other portions of the world, particularly Australia, South Africa, and the major food grain producers. Is there any remote connection between what Bible prophecy said would come to pass and a time described in the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew in your Bible as a time of the end and drought? Or is that just a lot of theological wishful thinking? Is that an attempt of certain doomsday prophets? And many people would tell you I am one of those, and I most certainly am not. I believe we live in a transitional period and that we're going to emerge into a bright, unbelievably wonderful new age in your lifetime, most of you. But nevertheless, is trying to connect what are called natural phenomena with the Bible, straining things just a little bit? Is that just an accident? Just some fortuitous quirk of nature which allows theological and prophetic types to get on the bandwagon and to say, I told you so. Now, frankly, if I hadn't told you so, I wouldn't be able to say, I told you so. But you see, the booklet that I have here for you, The Black Horse Famine, was put in print and produced long before this current so-called drought cycle. But the question now about the drought cycle is whether or not it is only a cycle, and whether or not it's going to get an awful lot worse before it gets any better. First, to put you in the picture as to what is happening, it is the worst on record in many areas. We have actually broken records on weather in Florida, the Bahamas, and other parts of the world. But more than this, some of the major food grain areas of the United States, the corn, the wheat, the soybean areas, and the vegetable growing areas of the Central Valley of California, have been terribly hard hit, and experts are now saying it's going to be an awful long time before any of those areas really recover. For example, in Iowa, the worst drought in 104 years since weather records were first kept there, which could mean, you know, because there are no records before that, the worst ever. There's only one way to say it, and that is it's the worst since records have been kept. Has kept farmers hauling water to feed livestock and worrying that there will be small corn, soybean, and hay crops if the rains don't come soon. As one farmer said, and it's interesting that some people do acknowledge that maybe God has something to do with the weather, he said, you're at the mercy of the weather, and praise the Lord, that's all you can do. I think he meant that maybe a little more accent on praise the Lord. I remember one occasion where some ski operators wanted to have some snow. They didn't do like this fellow said you ought to do, and maybe praise the Lord or pray to God, whom they may have some faint idea has something to do with the weather. Instead, they hired the local Indian tribe to come out and perform a rain dance. I guess they figured since those Indian gods had saved them from the white men and were so efficacious and powerful, might be a good idea if they asked them for rain. I forgot to check up to find out whether or not they got any. Maybe in this case they wanted snow instead of rain. This same farmer said, last year, we got sufficient subsoil moisture built up in the spring. We haven't had any fall moisture at all this year. And the same combination of drought and severely cold weather is beginning to worry farmers all the way from the Midwest of the United States to the Russian-Ukraine. United States government crop experts say it is too early to tell what effect this weather will have on 1977 wheat harvests, but indications are not good. December temperatures around the Northern Hemisphere were among the coldest recorded in more than 100 years. I couldn't believe my ears when I heard even friends of mine who had to travel and others who live in areas like that were living in sub-zero temperatures weeks in a row. And I mean when it gets way down below zero in places like Cincinnati and Chicago and elsewhere, you begin to wonder what in the world is going on. Now it's all an old story to people who've been sitting and shivering, to the schools that are closed, the hundreds of thousands who are out of work, the farmers scratching their heads as they look at those destitute fields out there, wondering where their next honest dollar is going to come from. But is there any connection, after all, between the biblical prophecies which said it would happen at about the same time as many other events are occurring? Now, if it were just an isolated, once-in-a-while event, suddenly out of nowhere we have a terrible winter, that's one thing. But when it happens at the very same time that this whole world has been reeling under shock after shock, politically, economically, sociologically, and where we have seen some of the greatest disasters, natural disasters, so-called, as well as man-made ones in Earth's history in recent years, it does make you wonder. That 24th chapter in the book of Matthew, called the Olivet Prophecy, in which Jesus Christ of Nazareth gave one step-by-step sequence of events after another, each to overlap the other, each to become ever more world or global in effect, each to become far more intensified as it came along to be added to the earlier disaster. He talked of warfare increasing, of wars and rumors of wars, the toppling of government. He talked about famine, which, of course, follows on the heels of drought. And we've been undergoing a series of global famines that have really stricken millions of people, if you know the whole truth about it. And so we produced a series of booklets based upon that 24th chapter of Matthew, the most important and the most famous of all biblical prophecies, which are called the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. As any beginning student of eschatology or biblical prophecy knows, the sixth chapter of the book of Revelation is interpreted by the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew. You cannot understand the one without the other. Neither could you understand the book of Revelation without the book of Daniel, and vice versa. Those portions of the Bible of Revelation, the 17th chapter, the 13th chapter, Revelation, the 6th and 7th and 8th and 9th chapters, together with the 4th, 7th, 11th, and 12th of Daniel, and the 24th chapter of Matthew, comprise some of the most vitally important portions of all of biblical prophecy. And they talk about what is called the time of the end. Not the end of the globe, the end of all of human life, but the end of civilization as we know it. Now, there's an interesting book out by the same authors of the book called Famine 1975, Who Will Survive? It's called An End to Affluence. And those who pick up the book are warned at the very beginning that if you have a sort of a devil-may-care attitude of, well, nuts to the subject of pollution and overpopulation, and forget all the problems of the environment and of the depletion of natural resources and the gradual diminution of Earth's mineral supplies and the like, I don't believe any of that stuff, then the author says this book is not for you. You shouldn't even bother reading it. But the authors go through the very hard, cold facts with which we live every single day, and they show that shuddering, shocking readjustments of the living standard downward in the so-called affluent nations are in the offing. That we are not going to live in an ever more burgeoning, ever greater, more affluent, wealthier society. The days of affluence are gradually drawing to a close. And the time when affluence becomes poverty is very close in this era of instability in the world. Now, if you'd like to argue that, that's fine, because I'm not trying to get people to believe me. You see, my job is not to get people to believe me, it's just to get people to listen. And if they hear it, then they're responsible for it. What they do with it is their problem, or maybe their blessing and benefit. But my job is merely to tell them exactly what is going to happen, and then let the chips fall where they may. It just so happens that each one of these major prophecies of Matthew 24, of wars and rumors of wars, of the increase in false religions, the rise of all sorts of cults, and the gradual inclusion of increasing state control, of even military and political control at the behest of major religions, is gradually taking place in this world as Jesus said it would. So these four booklets, all of them,
on the series of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, having to do with the revelation of those mysterious horsemen that John in vision seemed to see wraith-like galloping across the skies, and then told you exactly what he saw in that sixth chapter of the book of Revelation. For example, the one on that pale horse that talked about being very careful in measuring out little tiny specific amounts of foodstuffs and the like. And you see these terrible disease epidemics and famine and malnutrition sweeping the earth. Each one of these booklets, the one on the white horse, false religion, the pale horse, disease epidemics, the black horse, famine, and the red horse, war, are in the exact time sequence of those prophecies of Matthew 24 and Revelation 6 that show you, as nothing else can, exactly what is the meaning of the times in which you live. Now, it is not just a little problem here and there. I think you realize that by now. I was talking to a fairly large audience up in one of the wheat areas of Canada last year. And I was showing even then how we live in such a vulnerable society that even the slight increase of the price of Arab oil can cause reverberations all the way to the fuel for tractors using up that imported oil to plow up their farms up there in the wheat-growing areas of Alberta. And that farmers in the United States and Canada can suffer because of what some of the OPEC members might do. Well, you know, they can suffer an awful lot more quickly because of extended cold spells and then of wet springs. Now, on the one hand, you got the Mississippi River looking like a dried-up mess. I've flown over it several times recently, and all you can see is sandbars and islands sticking out everywhere. And as you know, the barges are stranded up on the banks and so on. Now they're saying that with all of this terrible hard freeze, and with a tremendous amount of ice now, that's moisture being stored up along the upper reaches of all the tributaries in the Mississippi itself. If there should come a sudden thaw, then I guess the advice to all those major cities all the way down the length of the Mississippi from Memphis to New Orleans would be look out, because some of the most devastating, record-breaking floods in all of history are going to strike. And what's worse, when that water starts rising, you know what it's going to be carrying with it? Giant chunks of ice, just as sharp as glass and razors, weighing tons. And they're going to come cascading down that river and go slamming into all kinds of permanent fixtures, docks, bridges, and the like, as well as barges, pleasure boats, and other types of shipping. And it's going to be some kind of a mess if it happens. Now, I'm not making a prediction that's going to happen. I'm going to go along with the Corps of Engineers and the weathermen and with people who live along that river and say that that's very likely that it's going to happen. But I've just got to admit, it seems like if it's not one thing, it's another. So this combination of drought and then severely cold weather without the moisture that needs to be there is going to have absolutely disastrous consequences in the summer of 1977 if something doesn't happen. And for all practical purposes, it is too late for anything to happen. Because now, if at very best, I guess that's not even a good way to say it, we were to have a sudden thaw, and it would start to rain, and to get mild and rain right on through the spring, well, all in the world that would do is to be putting too much moisture into the ground too fast, beyond the ability to absorb it, and you'd have the same situation as you had in the spring of 1975 with farms in Iowa looking like islands in the middle of lakes, with farmers being unable to get out into the fields to do their spring plowing because now it's too moist. And so you'd have the same problem in reverse. Well, some of those areas, they claim it would take 7 years or more of normal or above normal rainfall to even get back to where they were before this current drought began to strike. In Galva, Illinois, for example, summer and fall were the driest in 45 years, and farmers in that area and elsewhere in the Midwest were forced to carry water to their livestock because their ponds and wells were running dry. The severe cold had diminished the chances that the soil could be refilled with water, too. In southern Illinois, for example, the temperature never rose above freezing for 19 days in December of 1976. In Chicago and Rock Island, researchers had to dig back to the records for the 1870s to find a colder December on record. That means that the ground is frozen solid, and whatever moisture does fall will not be absorbed. That could mean that when spring planting season comes, the farmers will have to plant less corn, less soybean, less hay, and that's according to officials and climatologists and so on. So it's one of the worst winters ever to hit the United States. It is wreaking economic and physical havoc from the eastern two-thirds of the nation all the way to California. With record-breaking cold, ice and snow, snarling transportation, emptying unheated factories, closing schools, and leaving millions shivering, as well as hundreds of thousands out of work. Wintry blasts devastating Florida citrus and vegetable industry. And on January 19th, brought the first snow ever recorded in Miami. But I saw an interesting little clipping in the paper. They weren't going to record it. It was a strange way of doing things, but apparently because of the fact there was no weather bureau in one particular area, it wouldn't have been reported there, so it won't go on record. Well, I don't care whether they put on the record or not. Snow fell on Miami. And the losses, well, they were 85% of the vegetables, 30% of the oranges and the grapefruit, and that meant higher prices. But higher prices doesn't concern me as much as shorter supply. Shorter supply brings about higher prices. But when supply gets so short, there just simply isn't enough to go around, then it's not a matter of money. You can't eat money. It's a matter of hunger and maybe even of starvation. And I wonder how we in the United States are prepared sociologically with our private little arsenals, our millions of citizens who carry guns, our penchant for violence, our obsession with chaos, gore, and crime, our criminal-ridden society, the fact that 70 to 80% of the labor force are part or full-time crooks who are ripping off the company for which they work, it makes me wonder to what extent we are sociologically, I mean by that mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, prepared for the onslaught of really hard times. I wonder whether the American citizens are prepared for closed supermarkets. I wonder whether we are prepared to settle back in our homes and make do, and to get by in really hard times, or whether instead we're going to find a complete breakdown of society as we know it. Whether we're going to find armed gangs forming together to prey on helpless citizens. Whether we're going to find neighbor turning upon neighbor, and cities erupting in bloody racial and other types of bloodbaths, because people will seek to blame one another instead of taking a look at themselves. While Americans east of the Rocky Mountains, then, are suffering in the century's coldest winter, the West is gripped by a severe drought that is threatening catastrophic agricultural losses. Many sections, from California to the Mississippi River, have not had a heavy rain since the spring of 1975, and very little snow has fallen in the winter, and you knew about that. That was making headlines all across the nation, even prior to the inauguration, when Gerald Ford and his family went out to Vail, Colorado. There were headlines, again, about how daughter Susie was taking along her tennis racket. And we realize that most all of those resorts, even up in Idaho, Utah, California, where I guess if you look at all of them, millions literally of skiers congregate. And when they had the news, a little bit of snow had fallen here or there. I guess some of the New Mexican areas got a little bit, and finally a little bit in Colorado. Well, they went trooping off over there, so business was brisk for a little time. But the long-range picture is that for two solid winters now, many of those areas have had far too little snow. And snowfall is stored water. The snowpack in the mountains is next year's, and the year after that, water. It's water that goes down into those underwater rivers and springs. It's water that gradually fills up those deep wells. It is water that is gradually absorbed into the soil and the subsoil to bring the water tables up. It is melting runoff in the springs that causes the creeks and the rivers to fill up and gives those irrigation reservoirs and dams a good healthy supply of water. And when it is not there, then no matter what happens the next spring, you're going to be short. You're going to be short the following winter. So that's what we're having happen, especially in some of the most important vegetable and agricultural areas of the nation. Hardest hit, by the way, is California. After the third driest year on record in 1976, agriculture experts were warning that the continued drought could turn into the worst in the state's history. Northern California Sierra Nevada range, the state's main agricultural watershed, as I've been talking about, has received only 5 inches of moisture in the last 6 months. Normal is 30 inches. Reservoir levels have dipped to all-time lows. Some power companies fear there will not be enough water to generate electricity, as a matter of fact. So even a power problem may come along because of hydroelectric power being unavailable. But the most important thing to all of this is the global implications. Some of the nation's leading climatologists are now claiming that what is happening is perhaps the end of what we can call stable weather as we have known it for the last decade or so. That we're going to go back to a period of time, if we're going back, maybe we're coming to an unprecedented time, but even prior to the time the records were kept in the United States, and remember that great, terrible blizzard of the late 1800s that killed too many hundreds of thousands of cattle and virtually wiped out a great deal of the ranching and agriculture of the plain states in this country? Maybe you haven't read about it, the one that was called the Big Freeze-Up, but it was such a devastating thing that it had cropped up in an awful lot of Western novels and historical novels that are still extant today. But now new evidence is coming to light that North America's weather, and perhaps the world's, is becoming far more erratic, and scientists are beginning to wonder whether or not this increase in the variability of the weather from season to season has important implications for global food supplies. There are four major grain producers upon which much of the entirety of the 4 billions of mankind rely. The question has been advanced time and time again. Can the United States of America feed the entirety of the world? Well, now let's see. Would you like to answer that question? If you take a look at 30, 40, 50, 70% drops in production, I would like to ask the question, are we feeding the rest of the world anyway? Or is not the nation of India and Pakistan, of Indonesia, those highly, totally dense portions of the world where the population is so thick that it's incredible. I forget exactly how many thousands of people or hundreds of people to the square mile in some of these areas of the world, but they're so utterly dependent upon foodstuffs produced from outside their own borders. These are the have-nots, the so-called third world, the so-called underdeveloped countries of the world that depend entirely upon food supplies from the haves, the food grain producers. And these are primarily the United States, Australia, Argentina, and the Soviet Union. Now, if we, those four, cannot keep up the food grain production, which we are not right now because of devastating drought and cold weather, then that simply means other people elsewhere starve. That was one of the points of William and Paul Paddock's book, Famine, 1975. Interesting that they hit that right on the button, and they wrote the book five or whatever it was several years before that time. I don't know whether the book came out in 68 or 9, but it was somewhere around the late 60s or the turn of the early 70s. And their title was Famine 1975, and that's when the first really big, terrible, long year of famine and drought began to hit. And it's continuing, and it is worsening, not getting any better. Now, their point, as a part of the title of the book, was America's decision, who will survive? And the point they wanted to make in that book was that the United States will come to a time when political considerations about who gets our food grains will be so important that we will be almost playing a role, godlike, of deciding which nation, like in India or a Pakistan, for example, should merely be written off, and where we say, I'm sorry, but we've got to stop the flow of food grains to that country. There is no way we can remain alive, that our allies, our friends, and other people closer to home can remain alive and support the nation of India, Pakistan, or other country at the same time. It's a point well taken, because we now move closer to that point, and it's going to have unbelievable geopolitical consequences and eventually military consequences, and you wait and see. I said the first rounds of World War III would come about as a result of trade war. But one of the most important items, commodities if you wish, to be traded among and between nations is the most desperately essential one of foods. Immediately beyond that or behind that comes those minerals and natural resources with which to fuel industry and to keep the economy of nations viable. Fertilizers and most importantly, energy. Food is first. Energy is second, and beyond that, fertilizers and other vital materials such as minerals, ores, and the like. And when all of that is interrupted, when we move closer to a time now where nations begin to retreat in upon themselves into the arms of despotic leaders who will promise grand dreams for tomorrow and instant solutions to untenable problems for today, when it will become far more chauvinistic, ultra-right, and nationalistic, when they will begin to go about the business of building up huge military machines to get those dwindling means of survival from other nations who probably are a little more fortunate than themselves, then we're going to see a disintegration of the political climate in this world as we have come to know it. And a lot of that is going to be brought about directly as a result of upset weather. I know it seems to be academic and maybe a little bit difficult for people to understand how a drought or a cold snap, or a wet spring, or a late monsoon can bring about a war, but believe me, it can. You ought to get these booklets. I want to take a moment to tell you about again, because there are all four of them here I'm offering on one program, four booklets, and they are those four horsemen of the apocalypse. Each one is a separate booklet that takes you right through in very simple and yet graphically illustrated, interesting, fast-moving form the explanation of each one of those four main prophecies of Jesus Christ in the Olivet Prophecy of Matthew 24, as also shown in Revelation, the sixth chapter. That's the white horse, false religion, the red horse of war, the pale horse of disease epidemics, and the black horse of famine. But if you just ask for those four booklets on prophecy, or better yet, ask for the four horsemen booklets, we'll know what you mean. I know the word apocalypse is difficult for a lot of people. It's a Greek word. It doesn't mean devastation or cataclysm. It does not mean chaos. It does not mean pandemonium, in spite of the fact that most people think it does. The word apocalypse is misused by most people, even newsmen, who talk about some apocalyptic happening, and to them that means some catastrophic occurrence. No, the word apocalypse in the Greek language means a revelation. The word revelation, the book of Revelation, a lot of people talk about the book of Revelations. There is no such book. There is a book of Revelation in the Bible, and that is the English word translated from the Greek word apocalypse, and it means to reveal, an uncovering. It is a book that is mysteriously sealed, and as those seals on a scroll are unveiled and are broken open, there are prophecies that come to light, many of them in symbol. There are mysterious symbols revealed in that booklet, and the only way to understand it is to understand the interpretation of it by Jesus, who is the interpreter of prophecy himself. The greatest prophet who ever lived is Jesus Christ of Nazareth. His prophecies are found in Matthew 24, in Luke 21, and those very same prophecies are the key to unlock, to your understanding, those mysterious four horsemen of the apocalypse that have to do with wars that are occurring now and will occur. What about Korea? Is President Carter going to be successful in winding down American involvement there and bringing more troops home? Or are we going to find ourselves involved, unwillingly, dragged into war again somewhere, such as the Middle East, North Africa, South Africa, Cuba, in the Caribbean, in our own hemisphere, or in Korea, or elsewhere? What's going to happen in the next few years? The only way for you to understand is to know what Bible prophecy says. I knew we were going to have drought. I didn't know if it was going to be exactly in the mid-70s, but when I began to read that scientists were claiming there was some correlation between sunspot activity, that these droughts seemed to come in 20-year cycles, I read William and Paul Paddock's book, Famine, 1975, America's Decision, Who Will Survive? I can see the Bible prophecies, then way back in the 60s and even before, and on especially into the early 70s, 71 and 2 and 3, I was saying drought is going to strike, and I've said it hundreds of times to millions of people. Now it's here. It is happening. And I knew in advance it was going to happen. I didn't know the exact week or even the month, but I knew the general time in the middle of the decade. And other people do too, hundreds of them, because they have access to the same material. So you pick up the telephone and dial that toll-free number, 800-423-4444, and ask for those booklets on the Four Horsemen. The number is 800-423-4444. Listeners in California, Alaska, and Hawaii should dial area 213-577-5225. The address again in just a moment. The booklets on the Four Horsemen are absolutely free of charge. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.